Someone helped me out. I try to direct him indirectly. I knew him, I didn't know him. I liked him, I don't like him. I agreed him, I don't agree with him. Cars are cars. Whatever we say in these weeks is insufficient to repent of our cars are cars. It's impossible. It's cheap. It's impossible. If somebody was given to us the gift, I could have grown to. I can't imagine myself without the input of the world. I say the same thing. And I was, the Talmud movement, and sat there. It's just a matter of the toll that I learned. The toll of growth, the toll of dynamism, the toll of Avatar. Avatar Emmet. You are Talmudim, but Talmudim of the Rav, you have the same authority as us. It's past the Shalom via. All the Rav wanted to do now? All the questions I answered. What did the minister want to do? What do you want him to do? He wanted to share this Avos with us. He wanted to concentrate on the learning. He would say, put your accounting job and go become a Rosh Hashiva. He wouldn't say that. If you were, had an inclination, a desire to go into Melech HaTakodesh, or the Rav, or the Mechanic, he would encourage you. He would help you. He would advise you. He would say to be strong in the face of adversity. If you had your eyes set a different kind of goal, he would encourage you, not some of the wrath of you. Yes, go, and next week we'll get it to Hashem Barabbas. Oh, you've never read Lonely Man of Faith, Adam 1, Adam 2, I'm not going to copy the whole thing. The one thing I remember is that he told Shlomo in the Kitzur, go out into the world and be the Kaddishim Shemai. Yes, you know that way. Or what she is to do with him, I don't know. I don't know what he knows that way. But the Kaddishim Shemai, not Kaddishim Shemai, Kaddishim Shemai. Be honest, be true, daven with kavana, learn whatever you can, be honest in your learning, train the children to be Yirei Shemayim and Ohavei Torah. That's what you want. That's the record, each and every one of you, Basher Rishon, is fulfilled. No one should say the Roman is a giant, and I'm a pygmy, and therefore I can't relate to it. You all can. You all must. Giant, and I'm a pygmy, and therefore I can't relate to it. No. You all can. You all must.
About Rabbi Goyen and Dr. Tom Soloveitchik, static was broken. That's one. An impossible and a frightening death. And remember, about 15 years ago, I was asked to say a shiur in the yeshiva in the Beit HaMedrash in conjunction with the Chag HaShmicha, a week-long series of shiurim given by the various of the yeshiva, and the Rav attended. I was sitting, standing, saying the shiur here in the Beit HaMedrash, and the Rav was sitting right next to me. I must tell you, although by that time I had a number of years of experience, both as a Rebbe and a Yeshiva, as a Rav and a Shul, I was frightened out of my wits. What did I say which would find favor in his eyes? He could not, in an instant, consider to be absurd, preposterous. Certainly, if it was true of pure Divrei Torah, shiur in Dine Mamonos, in monetary law, fear gripped me at that time, how much more so at a time like this. So our rabbis have taught us, the Gemara in Masechta Shabbos, Kufnu Gimel, Achinli the Hosam Ka'imli. One Amora told another, and speak that you would be pleased, speak in stirring and warm and emotional tone. And the reason given is the Hosam Ka'imli. Because I will be there. I will be there, of course, means of the spirit of the deceased, of the Nipter, his presence, according to our rabbis, at the Hesper of Yud. And therefore, as we begin, we have to get Mechila, have to beg forgiveness from the Rebbe, because undoubtedly whatever we say will be inadequate. And if you look at Rashi on that Gemara in Shabbos from Gila, Rashi tells us why this particular Amora say, Achimli the Hosam Kahimna, why wasn't he anticipating the normal emotional outpouring would automatically overflow? Rashi says, quote, the aim b'nei adam yichmorim kol kach al zokein v'lo yip. The people are not ordinarily overcome with emotion when someone who is elderly passes away. And it's a funeral, unfortunately, for a young person, and then everyone is overcome. Is touched, is moved. A funeral for someone who is older does not make the same impact. And while we are not in the period of time which the rabbis designate for tearful crying, the rabbis limit that to a mere 3 days after the passing of an individual or a relative. We've gone past the 3 days and past the 7 days of Shiva and the 30 days of Shloshim, actually, as we will see. We're now completing the second shlosh. And I was thinking when we were in the parasha this morning, the Ovia Yorok Yorok Lefoneha, as I'll tell us in Baba Kama, and that's a close part of it, that if we have observances which apply to a parent, when the concept of it's gorgeous, it should really be doubled. that 7 days should really be logically 14 days. And therefore, after this motion period for the loss of the parent, or speak to the loss of the Rebbe, who is the Vio Lechayel of Avah, the Rebbe of Adumah can be said, as Hashem Elokei Tatira, the Rabbi of Tamini Chachamim, the climbing of a Tehesper to be the end of a double motion period, is certainly appropriate. Remember, reading in the Rav Don writing, after all, the Gemara Mishnah says that Adio, Kaya of Adam, Loma, Balosh, and Rabbah, a person is required to speak in the language of his Rebbe. Rav, in one of his classical Hespedim, because he was a master of Hespedim as well, in the Hespedim for the greater of Chaim Hella, his introduction explains the tremendous responsibility which a maskrit has to try to characterize accurately, without exaggeration, without falsification, without revisionism, to try to give as best as he possibly can an accurate understanding and appreciation about who the person was. And as the Rav explained, it has to be done from two perspectives. One from the purely rational, intellectual perspective, the factual perspective, and two, perhaps even more important, from the emotional perspective. People just walk away from Hesed the same way as they came in, having amassed certain tidbits of knowledge or information about a great individual. And I don't plan to give you the rough date of birth and the vicissitude of his lifetime. I'll try, to the best of my ability, to capture who the Rav was. And I recommend, as I told you in school today, find out who the Rav was for yourself. You may say, how can we do so now, after his Tatira? Read his work. I mean his work. The work that he wrote in his own pen, in Hebrew, in English. Listen to his voice. There's many, many tape recordings available, both in English and in Yiddish, which I recommend to you highly. They're available. Listen, you'll hear what a great man this was. I'll try to love the Rabbi in my Rebbe's way, because he often spoke, especially at this occasion, in metaphors. He spoke very dramatically. I'll try to capture the essence of what this great man was, what he meant to me, what he meant to all of us. I believe that as a community here in Riverdale, we've certainly been impacted upon by the Rav, not only by the fact that the Rabbanim have learned at his feet, as well as many of the Balabatim in the community, but also the indirect influence. Those who will learn from a Rebbe, from someone else, and therefore I think it's especially appropriate that we take careful attention to who the Rav was and how he affected our lives. As I mentioned, the Rav was nifter 2 months ago. He nifted 2 months ago. Today is the 17th of Sivan. The Rav was actually nifter Ben Ashmoshel in the twilight between the 17th and the 18th of Nisan 2 months ago. When I was told that the Rav passed away in approximately the period of Ben Ashmoshel in twilight between day and night, I couldn't help but recalling how many times I heard from the Rav, and it was printed in the paper, his interpretation of Ben Ashmoshel, of what twilight really means. We ordinarily view the expression of the suffix of the doubt as a doubtful fact. Is it day or is it night? Is it one or the other? The Rav explained at length that that's not what Ben Ashmoshel means. That's not something which can be resolved by a scientist coming and proving somehow to some theory that it really is day or that it really is night. On the contrary, Ben Ashmoshel, as the twilight period, has characteristics of both day and night. A conflict which can never be resolved. It is Yom V'Laila Mishamshim V'Rebuvio. It's a combination of the facets of day and the facets of night. however, if day and night could in fact be Mishamek Virgudia, could in fact function together in the period of Enashmazit, we see therefore that elements which we consider apparently to be contradictory are in fact not so, not completely so. And I feel that the Rav in his lifetime, what he stood for, personifies this idea. He lived in two worlds which at first glance contradicted one another. And yet, just as Ben Ashmoshes is a near miraculous combination of two contradictory and conflicting elements, so too the Rav in his life was able to combine these divergent and almost contradictory elements into one personality. To what contradiction do I refer? I'm not referring to any particular detail, whether it be his position on this or on that. I'm referring to perhaps the most fundamental contradiction in the Rav's complex being. I'd like to introduce it by going back and making a reference to one of his great works, Isha Alocha, which he describes the man of Alocha when he looks at physical phenomena and how he views them through the prism of the Torah and the Halacha. And it's written there that when the Isha Alocha looks at the sun setting on Yom Kippur, does not appear to him to be the sunset of any ordinary day. No. This sunset is a sunset which achieves kapara, atonement, forgiveness, and as a result, it bears no resemblance whatsoever to the perspective of the Isha Alocha, the other sunsets of the year. The evening, the Rav soul was taken from us, was the evening, the sunset, separating the 17th and the 18th day of Nisan. What kind of day is that? We look in Shulchan Aruch, in our Chaim, in Simatov Peitet, in Yud, we read as follows. It was Alam of Kodesh. Kodesh means new grain. And the Shulchan Aruch tells us that Kodesh is prohibited in Chutzal Aretz, in the diaspora, until the beginning, until Tchilat Leil Shmona Osar Benis. From the beginning of the 18th night of Nisan. What is Kodesh? Of course, in the literal sense, Kodesh means new grain. So we know from the Chasam Sofer and from others, Kodesh means anything new. Whatever is new, what didn't exist before. And we are taught that it's prohibited until the beginning of the 18th night of Nisan. What occurs to me is that the Rav was nifter at the beginning of the 18th night of Nisan, was almost to symbolize this idea that in his life he embodied this contradiction. In some senses, it was already the night. It was the Tchilas Leil Yud-Tes, the night of the 18th, when things which were new were to be accepted and to be encouraged. There were things that Soloveitchik, the Chuan of the Bracha, felt could absolutely not be touched. One iota couldn't be changed. Nothing. It was part of the Mesorah of the tradition, which is immutable, which is eternal. This idea, this contradiction in his life between the old and between the new, has led to a 2-month-old series of different understandings. The Rav was this, the Rav was that. Don't make revisionism. He never saw with a secular book, he only saw with a Gemara. He was a philosopher. What was he? I'd like to try to evaluate the Rav in my own limited way by referring to the Rav's greatest hero, whom he called Rabbeinu HaGadol, Rav Zahar Rabbeinu HaGadol, and that is the Rambam. The Rambam wrote three major works. He wrote the Yad HaChazaka, the Teretz HaMishnayot, and the Mor Nevuchim. The Rambam's Yad HaChazaka was the Halach. He is so the fundamental of everything. The Rambam himself called it in his very opening book of Yisori HaTorah, Lechem U'Bosor. This is the bread and the meat. This is the substance of what Jewish life is all about. The Rambam wrote his book in Hebrew, the eternal language of the Jewish people, because he wanted it to be a book to last for all generations. And only in Hebrew, can something last for all generations. To this day, people in the Rav with perhaps the best of the generation in being the Dayes and passing every nuance in the expression of the Rambam, if he wrote in his own hand in Hebrew, in the position of his father and his uncle and his grandfather, forever and ever. What was the Pirush HaMishnah? It was written in Arabic. And even after all the new translations, by Chaim Heller and Paz, and the Tapas, and going back to the old translations, it's still impossible for us to recapture every last nuance of what the Rambam says. Impossible. Something by definition is always lost in translation. Why did the Rambam write it in Arabic? Because at that time, it was necessary. At that time, it was necessary to take purely Torah concepts, which is the Pirush HaMishnayot. It's pure Torah, mostly halacha, a little bit hashkafa, parakhelek in particular. The basics of emunah come from the Pirush HaMishnayot, and to translate it to the masses in their vernacular as they understood it. So something is wrong. Even though at the time, undoubtedly, it had a tremendous impact on those who couldn't quite grasp the Hebrew to understand the Torah as Hashem. Finally, Mor Nevuchim. What was Mor Nevuchim? Well, Nevuchim was already a combination, not only in terms of the language, but also in terms of the concept. Well, Nevuchim was a mixture of Torah concepts with Russian, Gemaras, Sukkim, together with secular concepts. Philosophy of Aristotle, the Arab philosophers of his time. This was the Mor Nevuchim. What happened? There were Nevuchim in the Rambam's time. Those who were lost, they didn't know which way to turn. They didn't know which way to go. They couldn't find their way. They couldn't find their way in the difficulties of that particular generation. And the Rambam undoubtedly saved innumerable souls in his time and the generation beyond by what he wrote. How many individuals would have otherwise turned to different faiths or different beliefs if not for the Rambam's Mor Nevuchim? But by definition, any such work has to create two things. One, it is limited. It is limited in time. Witness the fact that the Mor Nevuchim today, in 1993, is by and large a work which is product of a limited number of scholars. You don't find it as a work, a popular work, as you do the Mishnah Torah, which is on everybody's desk, everybody in the Olam HaTorah, and even in the broader community. The Pirush HaMishnayot, the back printed in every Gemara, everyone has a Pirush HaMishnayot. In this part of Bukhah, most people don't even have it in the house. And the reason is, among others, that the philosophy, those questions which perplex the people of his time, don't bother us. A different zeitgeist, if you will. Different problems. We have many problems. But the problems how to reconcile our Sicilian philosophy with the Torah don't seem to be perplexing too many people nowadays. That's number one. Number two, by definition, any such work is bound to arouse opposition. Impossible to produce outside value into the Torah world without arousing opposition. So There will always be, as there were in the time of the Rambam, individuals who fear such an introduction of a foreign concept. And in the case of the Rambam, we know what happened exactly. The Rambam, Mardavukim, was burned. Burned by Jews. Burned by Torah scholars. Even some of the Torah scholars who were in awe of the Rambam's own Mishnah Torah. They studied it. They followed it. They ruled their lives based upon it. But the Mora Nevuchim to them was an anathema. It was philosophy. It was alien. Heresy. And they burned it. They regret the deed. It's another story. Rabbeinu Yonah, the author of Shari Tshuva, was involved in some of the Hanois against the Rambam's firm, and he attributed the terrible burning of the Gemaris, the Talmud in Paris, I think in 1242. He said, it's awful, we burnt the Rambam, and the Goyim came and burnt the Shah, burnt the Talmud. He went to the Machila, and then he wrote a Shari Tshuva as a result of this excess zealotry, which led him to mistakenly burn the books of the Rambam. My Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, was one of the brothers, was, from this perspective, the Rambam of our generation. First of all, he was an Isha Halom. He fulfilled his, as he put it, the Rambam put it, Mile Kreso, the Lechem Uboka. He filled himself up with bread and with meat, having studied Torah with his father till the age of 22. And then he gave of that bread and of that meat to his students for the rest of his life. What is lechem and bosa? Why must he use two phrases? Red and meat. Why must he, what's all the one phrase? In my opinion, red is the staff of life. Red is dry. Red is standard. Red is something everybody has to have in order to live. This symbolizes the yediyas haTorah, the knowledge of the facts of the law, which everybody must know. Everybody must know it. You have to know it. What is basar? What is meat? Meat, as we know, can be prepared differently by any cook or chef. Some spice with salt, some with pepper, some will cook, and some will fry, and some will roast. Different taste. Every meat has a different taste. On both sides, from lechem and bread, there were many gedolim in our generation. Many. Some had greater knowledge of Shas, some of Rambam. Some knew better Noshim Zikim, which we call the Yeshiva Shem Asefis, and some knew better Hotshim and Taras, which is not so frequently known in the Yeshiva. Some were experts in Shulchan Aruch, some were experts in Tanakh, all aspects of Torah were greater experts who knew the facts of their field better than others. In each week, when it comes to Basar, when it comes to the meat, to the explanation, and the taste of Torah, the rub was incomparable. Having studied and heard many other gedolim of our generation, certainly in the American scene, there was nobody who could capture an audience, who could explain things in the way that the rub did. As far as I know, there was nobody. His basar, the taste of his meat, was something which you had to be there to have to hear it and to understand it and appreciate it. What a wonderful taste. Tamuru Kitov Hashem. You felt the greatness of the Torah when the Rav gave it over. It was something actually to behold. The Rav called himself a Malamed, a teacher. It was a fantastic Baal Masbi. He could explain things so clearly and so well. He could analyze, he could define with such tremendous precision. And it's worthwhile for all of us to study his Torah that he wrote, that he said, that his students wrote. So this was the essence of what the Rav was. But the Rav was not only Yadav HaDokh. He was also a Tirish HaMishnah. Which means that the Rav took the Torah, concepts which are eternal, and he adapted them for our generation. Not anybody can do. First of all, in the halacha itself, the Rav's language, for those who are privileged to hear the Rav in Yiddish, who are able to understand the Rav's Yiddish, it was incomparable. It was a literary Yiddish, which He had an absolute command of the language. It was more than the language itself. His language in English was incredible. And don't forget, when he started speaking in English publicly 30-plus years ago, it was considered a radical departure. All of the members of his generation who were trained in Europe didn't speak English in public, even if they spoke it privately. And he felt this generation needs the Arabic of today. It needs English. They should be able to understand the concepts of Torah better. And he was a Malamed, and he said it's going to be English. But beware, when he said English, he meant English. He didn't need any combination. One of his Talmidim told me on the day of the Levaya, that when the Rav first began speaking in English, he went to an extreme. When he would speak about Mila, he wouldn't say Mila, he'd say circumcision. And when he would speak about a Kohen, he would say a priest. English is English, and Yiddish is Yiddish, and no combinations in which are corruptions of both languages. Yet, what he did was, as we mentioned at the Altar, Rav Talata said, Rav Chaim Gritzker, the Rav's grandfather, would be able to combat the Haskalah in his time, so too. The Rav in his time, two generations later, was able to exercise a tremendous force to counter the tide which existed in this country over so many decades, sweeping people away from Torah, away from Orthodoxy, away from Yiddishkeit, away from the serious study of the Talmud and the traditional sources. He spoke magnificently to audiences, whoever would hear him, whether it be in New York, in Boston, or elsewhere. In Halacha, he always emphasized it's a serious enterprise. It's not a joke, you get up there and you just put two things together. The Rav was great in taking the Halacha and adapting to the generation. He was equally great in his drush. Whoever heard a drusha from the Rav, in full impact and glory, we'll never forget it. It was something to just be astounded. He captured your imagination. He had audiences sitting, listening to him for hours, hours! And he was playing basic concepts of Yiddishkeit with such poetry, with such drama. He was a great darshan. There was nobody like him. And yes, it is shiurim, it is halacha shiurim. He was dramatic. After one of the Yortzeit shiurim, someone came over to the Rav and complained from one of the different yeshivas and said, Rebbe, this whole thing was dramatic. And the Rav responded, yes. Drama is part of communication, it's part of Talmud Torah, the Rabbin. You have to be dramatic. That's what the audience needs to wake it up, to be able to tune in better to the eternal concept. Then it should be commended, it shouldn't be criticized. No. After all the drushes that the Rav said, and he said so many of them in his career, some even printed, he felt that the main thing was the halacha. And I could prove it by quoting a personal incident. When I was a busman, when I was engaged, so I was in Boston in the summertime, and in Boston there was a different person. For those who knew in New York only, you missed something. Boston said that I know the Rav better for the few summers I spent in Boston from all the years I've known him in New York. So I went to bring my talis to meet the Rav. I said, bring the talis. So I remember at first, before I get into the conversation, the first thing the Rav did when he met the talis was to tip his hat. So that was his way. He tipped his hat. He was a gentleman. That was the way he was trained. That was supposed to be gentlemanly. And even if it was 2 years after that habit was popular, the fact that he was a gentleman made an impact on me that I remembered still. And I was just so, wow, this is a gentleman. We sat down to talk, a few formalities, and I was just sort of tongue-tied. So Robinson was just quiet, didn't say a word. That was his want. He wouldn't speak, but he had something to say. And I'm sitting there, well, I'm going to talk to them. Usually I have no problem talking to them about the last day's shiur. about a Gemara. What am I going to say now? They started talking about one of the Rebbe's most masterpieces that recently read at that time, called Kol Dol Yido Fe. It's a fantastic, fantastic Mara of Russia. And I told him about it. It's a fantastic edition. The Rebbe looks at me, waves his hand, Ad Russia. What do you think? Ad Russia. Which means, the way I understand it, as good as it was, he wasn't thinking it was good, he printed it, he thought it was good. It's limited. It serves an important function. It is a very important function. It's to explain how he viewed the whole Eretz Yisrael and Medina Yisrael and Klal Yisrael and the story of Am Yisrael. Ad Russia. Limited to a particular audience at a particular time, as opposed to that we were learning in the Shia the day before. And whatever the stuff we were learning, that forever. What we were saying was these rushes are very important, but the halacha is the ikka. The Torah, which is forever, it's not limited by any time or any place, that is his main legacy. What was the Gemara in the Bukhin? The Gemara in the Bukhin was the fact that the Rebbe not only explained Torah concepts to adapt to our age, but the Rebbe introduced outside concepts. Yes. He wrote in his articles about philosophy, he made references to the sciences, he made quotations in Greek and in Latin and in German, things which were considered unusual for people who had his original background. Not only was the language modern, but the content was modern. So an entire computer erupted. Was this a hurrah Shaw? It's a Ben Hershian question. The hurrah Shaw? Or is it something which the Rav felt should be for all generations? It has to be the Sefer Torah. And the fighting's already beginning. I will give you my approach. My approach is go back to the Rambam. Go back to the Mor Nebuchim. Was the Mor Nebuchim a hurrah Shaw? Or is it forever? I believe the answer is follows. Go. In its time, as a Rosh Shah, the Mor Nebuchim was critical. In certain places, it was indispensable. Without it, Yiddishkeit would have been, chalila, almost lost. So felt that Rambam obviously would not have spent the time writing it. However, if a man as great as Rambam wrote it, then there were lessons to be learned from this quote, the Rosh Shah, for all generations. Even if I'm not perplexed by what Aristotle had to say, I can still open up a Mor Nebuchim, and as much as I understand, I can gain lessons forever and ever. The same thing I believe applies to the Rebbe himself. When he discussed neo-Kantism, which in his time was the rage of the day, it was necessary to introduce this idea in order to be able to stem the tide of those who were going against the world of Torah. However, even though I never studied neo-Kantism, what I read, what the Rav wrote based upon these thoughts, words written by a great man, have lessons for all generations. You know, the Chalap mentioned that he once, in a light moment, asked the Rav what most people were afraid to ask him. Rebbe, why did you go to a university? Why did you leave your father and go to Berlin? Fair question. The Rav looked at him quizzically and said, because my mother sent me. What did this great woman, the Bitan Shel Kedoshim, what did she see when she sent her son, the Elui, the prodigy, who had already been known at age 22 as one of the Gedolei Torah. See what the Gedolim of then wrote about him. What did she see in 1925 when she sent him out of Litza and Poland to Berlin to an entirely new world? I believe I know what she saw. And I believe that what she saw is based on something which we don't fully comprehend. Because you see, we don't have a full understanding of the period. We think that Lithuania, the Litvak, we know that there was held forth in these great yeshivas. There was a prime in Brisk and Falbala. There was a prime in the Chazanish in Vilna. The great Gadol of Litza was the center of the world. We do not often realize this, but that was a dying soul of society. There were many great bastions of Torah in these locations. The Rav told that when he left Europe for the last time in 1932, he passed through Vilna. And he went to Davin by the Goyim's Kloyes there, by the shul which has a great history. And he came into the shul and he found that there was less than a million there of individuals under the age of 30. What did that mean? They meant that the zeitgeist was wiping people away. You may have read in some of your biographies, your Gedolim biographies, how so many were almost taken away, almost. The Maskilim were about to take them away from Yiddishkeit. They were saved. Well, for every one that was saved, there were 100 that were not saved. And Torah in Lithuania, as it was in Germany and in America, there was just all things swept away by the time. And so this great woman said to her sons, "Oh, my son, go to Berlin, get a doctorate, study the sciences and philosophy, so that you can acquire the kalim, the means, by which you can spread Torah out of its narrow little circle, but rather to spread it to a much wider audience. For this you require academic degrees, you have to know the language, you have to know how to speak to people." This, to my mind, was why she sent us out to Berlin. And from that moment, was created a contradiction. She began to speak about. Between the old and the new, between the old Beis Medrash where the Rav was brought up, and the new academic university world, to which it was brought. Yet, as the Rambam says, if a person fills himself up first with lechem, with basar, with meat, and with bread, with the Torah, the halacha, then he can enter the parday. And the yot nichas v'shalom, and the yot v'shalom. And the Rav came out home, combining two seemingly contradictory worlds. The Rav learned philosophy with the Brisk Gadara. That's what he said. He applied the principles of a plan to whatever he was learned. That's the way he was trained. And on the contrary, he taught Torah in academic parlance. And the more was necessary, the more academic he became. And we had to speak even to a non-Jewish audience. He spoke to in Greek and Latin. As ever was possible. Because when I would come to see it, he could talk about the Rambam and about the Gemara and the Shulchanov, so he didn't feel a need for it. But when he felt the need for it, he was not ashamed to pull out his knowledge which he had acquired at such great expense. Those years in Berlin, although he was a master beyond belief, it was told to me that when the Rebbe was in Berlin, he sat and learned in the Yom of Alayla, while he managed to get an academic degree, but still, it took a lot of time. And the time that he devoted
audiences.
Speaking about the philosophy of the Rambam and Moreh Nevuchim, he spoke about Kierkegaard, he spoke to Yivo, the Yiddish, in their language, trying to somehow ignite a spark, perhaps in somebody closer to Yiddish. He was not embarrassed to use the knowledge which he had accumulated all those years, which he continued to accumulate. And he introduced, even to his students, some of these things. He encouraged students to learn these aspects of knowledge that he considered them to be valuable to them in their careers in terms of Habakkuk HaTov. However, it's not at all surprising that there were those who couldn't tolerate it. They couldn't tolerate the introduction of these foreign elements into the Torah world. They were afraid of a number of things, and there was reasonable fear. They were afraid that there'd be those who would enter into this paradise without the requisite meat and the requisite bread, and they were therefore not to be able to come out to Shalom in peace. Would be taken away by such study. Reasonable fear. There were those who were afraid that perhaps people would not give enough honor to Talmud Torah because of the outside study which they would introduce. And they attacked it. They attacked him. They said it's wrong, some use even very strong language, it's heresy, it's not for curses, you can't do this, you can't follow this man. What was the reaction? Very, very important point. How did he react to attacks which were made upon him? And there were many, and he was aware of them. How did he respond? After all, he said before, I have all the law of the Lost and Robber. You have to respond the way the Rebbe responded. How did he respond when he was the victim of these attacks? One way. The Rav responded with absolute silence. He didn't respond. Not publicly, and for all that I've been able to gather from members of the family and the closest Talmidim in, not even private. He wouldn't say that this one is there, that one is there. He's attacking me on this, attacking me. On the contrary, he listened to the tapes I mentioned earlier. He would hear what the Rav said. What respect you have to have to every Talmud Chacham. Every Talmud Chacham. Especially the Zikne Hador. We're speaking about the elders of the generation, because they saw yet the giants of the previous generation. Rosh Avmea Me'achoro. And therefore he said explicitly to his students, you respect the Rosh Yeshivas from all Yeshivas. Learn what you can from them. Have honor from them, for them. I believe it's particularly important to demonstrate the connection, the shaykhus that the Rav has to the Gedolim of his generation. But unfortunately, there are revisionists who would like to wipe this portion clear of the history books completely. That's why I feel it's a very special chiyuv to mention it at the present time. Let me keep my own memory first. I remember when the Rav was called upon to install Rav Moshe Feinstein Zefer Tzadik Livracha as the president of the Agudas HaRabbonim. Approximately 25 years ago, I believe it was after the year of Rav Levi Silver, if I'm not mistaken, Rav Moshe was appointed to be the head of the Agudas HaRabbonim. He had there, who was at that time, all the many people at Bonham were there, but the one that they called upon to make the installation speak was the Rav, and I know what he said. Yeah, I heard it from the Mori a few weeks earlier when he said the Megillah here. Talk about the shul of Hutzal, as opposed to the other shuls, you know, Moshe's greatness and his fears. It was quicker than Akkadi. That was a Russian event. Baron Cutler, a little bit earlier, was known then as the general of our Moshe. That was the school of Gedolim that we grew up with when we were young. Invited the Rav to speak by the Pinnach HaTzmoy. Everyone knows, there's even a picture. Some of the texts of the press of the love between Rabban and Rav Moshe, the Pinnach HaTzmoy is in it. I didn't really know Rabban, so I can't speak, but I know his son of Shneir. And ever of Shneir was equal, and we met on a number of occasions. His first, and it was almost the only question to me was, how's the Rav? How's he feeling?
what is he learning, how does he feel gesund, what is he doing. And seem sense of humor. He was somewhat able to get the ropes to come out a little bit. And I know for a fact that 2 years later, when there were personal family problems, the Rav had, he still said, "What's that?" You know, that there were other national organizations, the Rav was involved in all of them. Purim and Torah, for example. And the Rav had his Chief Balavas, the fewest thing, the Florida of the Rav, and no, for decades, the president of Torah and Torah, and his son. What happened? So I'd like to quote a pasuk. A pasuk we say, the pasuk smoke. If I yoke him at a pasuk, I shall a yoga at yoke. So if yoke, a new king and new generation got up, they don't know who, what, where. You know who he is? They literally do not know who the man is. They don't know what they don't want to know. They don't know. They don't know. Some don't know, some don't want to know. I don't want to come to criticize. But they don't know. And you don't know. You know, we can't afford to forget. If others don't know, we have a responsibility to care for them. And the Pasuk says, the Yosef who are Shalat al Haoret, who are Mashfil Kol Amor. I've even touched what the Rav was. In certain circles, the Rav was the Shalat. He's the last, the final word. His word was it. But even in other circles, he was the Mazdir. He helped out. You know who he helped out. He helped out everybody. The Surah Tarzan, he helped out. He helped out yeshivas in every part of the world he could find. Everywhere. Did he know that they didn't quote, hold, end quote, from him? It didn't matter. It was a place the Torah was being studied. He was there to help. You know, the Rav was not a person who simply listened to what the other said. He said, "Kabul Daiti," he always said, "You know, do what you think is right." But people think of him, he was just a person who would wave or wouldn't say anything. He's written up in the press, the Rav has no position, you do whatever you want. Chalila v'chalila. That was what he said. 30 years ago, as we mentioned before, it was he who put an end to that particular site that I remember as a teenager, which was called ecumenicism. Oh, let's all be friends. The new pope came in, you know, the friendly pope. We're going to make friends and we're all going to talk. And of course, the former of the third only all too happy. And even the Orthodox are waiting to go in. So the Rav put a stop to it. 40 years ago, oh, I really can properly remember, there's another pie. It was called conservatism. Take out all the machitas.
is the new Rav? That's what the paper says. Who is the new Rav of this generation? The answer is, of course, there is none. What? The rabbi teaches Paras of the Yadot. Hashem gives leadership, which is appropriate to the generation. In his generation, the Rav is the leader. All of his talent, all of his greatness, that was for him to lead two generations of Jews, 50 years of active Jewish life in the country. Which means if a person is put into the world, the Mepharshim explained before, his time, he wouldn't be able to do it, and afterwards he also wouldn't be able to do it, which also means you don't need it so much at that time. So leadership is tailor-made by the struggle to a particular generation. What do we have to do then? We have to try to follow in his footsteps. Everyone with his own talent. Some as a Nagashir, some as a Darshan. This one is to follow that aspect, the other aspect. But we have to be rooted in what he was. As Rav himself says, you have to be rooted in the ground. The Sharashan have to be deep down in Torah. And then the note, as he put it, that the tree itself, the leaves, can go on and encompass greater vistas and horizons as long as it's properly rooted in Torah. Yes, we have to try to capture what the Rav was in his Yad HaZakeh, and the Kirush HaMishnayot, and the Zmor Nebuchim, and concept. To try to have this, an impact, whatever we can, everyone in his own way, on the next generation. I'd like to conclude. It's something I heard from the Rebbe himself 30 years ago. Pasuk says in another Yeshaya, Shomer Mami Laila, Shomer Mami Lail, also Volker the Gan Laila, and Shavayu Bayu. It means that Kodesh Baruch Hu watches over the Jewish people, the morning comes, and the night comes, and Shavayu Bayu. What does it mean? Rubber slate. Hashem watches over the Jewish people through many difficult and long nights. Very difficult nights. There are so many problems in our affairs. Sometimes we become despondent. We're ready to give up. After all, things look good. Also, Boker. And then we become liable. We turn around to the negative. We can't bear it again. Is there any light at the end of the tunnel? You feel so terrible. So many problems. No solution. How do you get over the hump? It's a value. Explain, there are two kinds of people. The low tone, who goes on. What's the difference? Hazem tells us, the low tone, the low tone, the Kharbi of the Kashti is Kalusa Rusa. The Kharb, the sword, this is a short-term tefillah. Symbolized by the sword, which is a short range. Immediate. Whereas the bow and arrow, the Uso, the Kashti, the long-term, the long range. The first if it is a short-term situation, you can be led to despair. Oh, this is so terrible, so horrible. However, the person looks the longer view with a greater perspective, and you know that the soul who watches over you, no matter what, even in bad times, you're going to be ultimately a Yeshua. And this will give you comfort even in the most difficult of circumstances. We know in our Shimon Esrei, we have 12 brachos of Bakasha. The first 6 are private. The last 6 are public. We ask at the beginning for our own needs, whether it be intelligence, whether it be wealth, whether it be health. But then we suddenly turn to messianic matters. Being gathered in the exile, coming of the Messiah, living in the Yishalayim, the spirit of justice. The first is called Kalusa. The sword. The second part is the Uso, the bow and arrow,
the long-range goals of the Jewish people. So the basic Bishon of the Rebbe was, in the morning of his life, an absolutely rising star, a meteor, rising. Recognized that the dawn of his time as a great Torah scholar, accumulating all kinds of knowledge. As we read this morning, Amul Pnei HaMenorah, Yehu Shimash and Eris. All the knowledge that she accumulated was facing the Amul Pnei HaMenorah, facing the Torah, complementing it, enhancing it. This is his intention. He was like the sun in the sky. The decades. His word was the word which lit up large sections of the Jewish people. There were those who tried to stop it from happening. From himself, Paul in Boston, when he was young, there were those who tried to cut him off by impugning his integrity, so they knew they couldn't stop him, either from intellectual perspective, he was a fantastic darshan and orator. They had to try to get him with some furious charges against him to stop the star from rising. They didn't succeed. Almost succeed. They didn't succeed. And then for 40 years, the sun was in the sky. Many were privileged to see it. It was at its full height. And then it started gradually. It hurt to watch the sunset. It was difficult to see. I remember the first Yahrzeit Shiur that I heard when I was a Bar Mitzvah Bacher. My father took me to a school with over 1,000 people, hours long. Nobody was moved. It was just an incredible experience. And I remember 20 years later, the last question. Whoever was there, I'll never forget it. Whoever some kind of, we don't know what that, I still don't know exactly what it was. He was disoriented, he couldn't talk, he would start the Rambam and the Gemara. He was gone. This is a shadow of what we knew. It was difficult. Yet, people kept coming to the Shir. When the Rav stopped saying Shir some 7.5 years ago, the Shir was still filled. People were, it was like they wanted to see the last rays of the sunlight. They knew there was a Shir Lucas, it wasn't what it was, but they wanted to see something. They could perhaps extrapolate what this great man was 20, 30 years before. Until he had a stop this year called the Bein Hashemot. The last 7 years when in and out, he knew, he didn't know. All of us who loved him, kept away, we didn't know. He didn't know. He was just a twilight zone for so many years. Difficult year. So that great Bein Hashemot 2 months ago, and the night finally set in, the Rosh Hashanah was taken, and at the beginning of the 18th night of Nisan, from the Chodesh Adar to the Chutzlo, he returned to the Neshama. Terrible. Our pain is great, our sorrow is beyond truth. However, as the Rav himself said it, Osa Volker v'gam Loyola v'mtavayu v'yu. Yes, the Rav's morning, the Rav's evening, the Rav's night. The Rav has gone out to the greater day. The ultimate sun, the light of Gan Eden. And we, his students, have to try to follow in his footsteps. He was the great link of the Torah for us, all those greats who he knew from his family and beyond. We have to try to attempt a little bit, add another link, even a small link, to that chain. We are confident that the Rav in this place in Gan Eden is now a Melech Yosher for all those who attempt in his spirit to continue the legacy of Torah. The world generation. I believe that as orphans that we are, having lost this great Rebbe, translates those words, the words that we are not only looking for the immediate short range, but the words that we are part of an eternal Mesorah from Sinai till the end of all generations. If we follow and attempt to take his big link in his chain and to add little links of our own, the chain can continue unbroken. Gabel, Toloso, the Rosso, the Chobet Israel, Odom, Avu, and the Shnaya, the Lord. Hold, end quote from him.